Now, the next chapter is the events that happened between Yehuda and Tamar.
It says here that Yehuda in chapter 38, Yehuda went away from his brothers. The Rashi brings down that the reason he went away from his brothers was that he was put to blame a little bit, because he was the one that finally sold him. He said, why should we actually save him? He said, why should we let him die? Let's go and sell him. So he did save him, but at the same time, he saved him, but they told him, if you would have told us to give him back and not to sell him, we would have done that. Yehuda was the leader. So Vayeri Yehuda made Sapa, meaning that they took it out a little bit of him. They ostracized him. And therefore Yehuda went away. The word Vayeri they emphasized. He was demoted. And he went away until he came to Ishatulomi, whose name was Kira. And he saw Abbas Ishknani, whose name was Shua. And he brought her and he lived with her. Now there's a lot of discussion in the commentaries in the Medrash about this Basi Shknani. Was she really a Canaanite woman? And they say that it couldn't have been that she was a Canaanite woman, because Yaakov Avinu, there's one thought that Yaakov Avinu would not have his children come from a Canaanite woman. And if you go further than that, not only his children come from a Canaanite woman, the Canaanites were like the cursed people. He says she must have been from Ishmael, from Esau, from one of the other nations, but not from Canaan. Because if you go further than that, it would come out that Mashiach, right, comes, Malchus Beis David, came from Paris. They interpret the word Canaani as not being a member, that means she was living in Canaan, but he was really there from another country. He happened to be living in Canaan at that time. So he married her and he had three sons. And then it says that he took a wife for Er Bechoro, whose name was Tamar. And this Er died, and then Einon, the second son, came to the brother, and he wanted to be Miyabim her. Yehuda said to him, come to the brother, the Yabim Oso. The Hokim Zera Leachicho. Look at the 7, 8, 9. It says, Yehuda said to Einon, come to your brother, his wife, the Yabim Oso, and have children. Einon nu kilo lo yiazera. And if he comes to his brother's wife, he won't have the children. The Shiche Satzo said he would not, he actually spilled the seed in order that she should not conceive. So he also died. Now this idea, so Yehuda told her, wait till my son Sheva becomes a little older. And then he will be Mekayim in the midst of Yibum. Now, what is this idea of Yibum? So here, we find the Medrash, one interpretation was that Yehuda was the one who understood the mitzvah of Yibum. He initiated the concept of Yibum. But the Ramban goes into this. What does it mean, Yibum? It says that the children will be to the brother. How will the children be to the brother? So he says this has to do with the mystical concept of transmigration of souls, meaning that the brother, it's Kabbalistic, but the brother's soul will somehow be in the child. The brother's soul will somehow be in the child. So in a sense, it won't be his son, but it will be like the brother's. You can't say, because he has to call him by the name of the brother, what's so bad if you call him by the name of the brother? He says a lot of times you name him after the dead brother. But the idea is that this is almost, by Yibum, it's almost like a continuation of the marriage. Because when the brother married, when he used to marry a brother's wife, when there were no children with Yibum, so it said that you didn't have to go through the whole marriage ceremony as you do the first time. But even if he was intimate with her, unintentionally something happened or whatever, so it's his wife already. It was like there was a carryover of the Kedushin, of the brother, of the first brother to him. It's like a continuation of the marriage vows that the first brother had. So it's a mystical idea, which some say the nations understood it at that time because of this transmigration of the soul, and they practiced it before the Torah was given. Or some say that it wasn't the nations, but it was Yehuda that happened. Once the Torah was given, it could have been done, really, it could have been done by any member of the family. That's why a little later, Tamar represents herself as a harlot in order to have Yehuda. And in that way, she would be able to have children from Yehuda. So that would be indirectly the act of Yehuda. But once the Torah was given, it was only limited to the brother, not to a father. That means if a son died, God forbid, without children, the father cannot marry the daughter. The only one that could, according to Torah law at that time, marry was a brother. The reason is because the basic mitzvah in its fullest can be fulfilled when it's in the body of a brother because of the closeness from one brother to another, but not any other relationship. The idea was the Torah took the mitzvah of Yibum and it fulfilled it like in its fullest. It's not going to permit every, what we call relationship, which is so incestuous or close, it's not going to permit that for Yibum. But it shows the closest one where the law of Yibum, the concept of Yibum can be fulfilled in fullest, and that's from one brother to another. But, for example, if it's not a brother, if it's a cousin, or if it's like an uncle, where there is no prohibition against marrying that close kin, the concept of Yibum is still remains. That's why in the Book of Ruth you find Boaz going ahead and being Miyaveh Ruth. Like there it's called Kenei. It's not the real mitzvah of Yibum after the Torah is given, that's related to the brother. But the general idea of Yibum, if it doesn't involve any forbidden marriage, that still prevailed even after the Torah was given. But of course there's another option. The option is that she takes off the shoe, which is a sign that he releases her and he doesn't want to fulfill this obligation. Now, among Sephardim they were attracted, but among Ashkenazi, of course not, for generations and generations. The reason is because it says when a person, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum, has to have the true intent in his mind. Talmud tells us if he goes ahead and he marries his sister-in-law, not because he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum, but because he likes her, because she's rich, so it's as if he committed adultery with a brother's wife, just related to his brother's wife. So therefore, since somebody to have this purity of thought in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum is very difficult, even the time of Talmud the ready plan was very difficult, so therefore we don't practice this law of Yibum. But Yehuda, it said, he says he didn't want to, why didn't he let her go free? It says, wait here until the third son will get older. So it seems the Ramban says that Yehuda also wanted the law of Yibum to be fulfilled with her. But he didn't try to put her off, because why is he putting her off? But he really intended, but he wanted Shiloh to become a little older. That means he wanted Shiloh to become more, we're dealing with 12 years old at least, and fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. This is what took place here.
Now, Yibum, of course, the law was not given yet. The Torah was not given yet. But like the Ramban says, the principle of Yibum took place there. It was intact. Therefore, what is this principle of Yibum? It says there that in sentence 8, in chapter 38, sentence 8 says that Yehuda had two sons. He had one son Er and one son Aner. Now, Er, it says, was evil and intrinsically evil. In fact, the word Er, the Malbim wants to say, comes from Ra, Ayin Resh, Resh Ayin. He was bad. He had no motive for being evil. Anon was evil, but he had a motive. That means he didn't want to give, it says in sentence 9, Vayeda Anon, Yehuda tells him in 8, after Er that died. Er died because he didn't have any children. He didn't want any children. And Yehuda said to Anon, come to your brother's wife and fulfill the Levirate rites and establish descendants for your brother. Now it says that Anon knew ki lo lo yi'azora, that the seed would not be his, and therefore he refused to have children. He practiced a certain birth control. Levilti nosan zera le'achiv in order not to give descendants unto his brother. And then it says, Vayomos, in sentence 10, Gamos, so he also died. From this word, they learn out that that's how Er died. Er died also because he didn't have children, didn't want children. So Enon also died that way, except Er, there was no motive. Enon had a motive. So the Ramban is troubled in this sentence. Rashi says that when Yehuda tells Enon, come and establish a family for your brother, the Hakem Zera Leochicha, so Rashi says the son will be called, the whole idea is to give a name. The son will be called in the name of the deceased. But the Ramban says that's not true, because in the mitzvah of the Torah, it says later, if that was their custom, to have a name for the deceased, but we know later when the Torah gives the Levirate law, the Torah also uses the same language. Yakum al Shem Achiv Ames, that there will be seed on the brother's name, and there is no mitzvah there to give the child the name of the brother. There's no mention that he should give the child the name of the brother. And also, we find that Boaz, when he says by Ruth, he says, I'm the one that's chosen, the one that buys the field will be the one chosen, lo'achiv lo'achiv shem, to bring a name for the kin. And there it says, he was called Oved, the child that came from Boaz and Ruth, of this Levirate tradition, was called Oved, not Machlo. Now, if the whole idea is to give him the name for the deceased, so it should have been called Machlo. Why was he called Oved? Now, it says, Enon knew that he won't have the children. So Ramban says, what does this mean, he won't have the son? Lo, lo, yi, azera. What was wrong if he'll go ahead and he'll have a son that will be named after his deceased brother? Does that mean he doesn't have a son? So the Ramban says, there's enough reason to say that it has nothing to do with the actual naming. And what is the idea, lo, lo, yi, azera? What did he know that he won't have the children? Meaning, Said Gadol, a hidden secret, from the secrets of the Torah in the birth of a person, of an individual. And those people, he said, who in the previous generations, and even in our generation, who were given by God eyes to see, and ears to hear, they understand the whole concept here. The idea is that even before the Torah, they knew that there was a great benefit by this performance of the Levirate tradition. And the brother is the first choice. And if not the brother, then the next of the kin. The one who is inheriting, right, the Nachla, he is the one who should go ahead and perform this act. And therefore, the custom was to marry either the brother or the father or a close kin. That was before the Torah. Obviously, afterwards, it was limited only to the brother because the major purpose would be the brother, but before the Torah, when you didn't have these laws of incestuous relations, so it could have been even the father. Now he says, it could be that the Medrash says Yehuda was the one who initiated the law of Yibum, meaning that Yehuda received the secret, the sod, and this understanding from his fathers, and therefore he sought to implement it even before the Torah was given. They understood it, because they knew the entire Torah and the Sodas, but something like this, Yehuda had studied, and he felt that it has its a place to institute at this point. Now, the Torah later came and overweighed this with many cases with the forbidden relationships, and only permitted this one instance. Now, the idea is that the neshama of the brother, or what would have been the descendants of the brother, that neshama, and this has to do with the transmigration of the souls, that neshama will occupy the body of this child. This was really the true secret of Yibum. So, Vayeda, he knew, ki lo lo yi azera, that the child will not be his child, meaning that it won't have the spiritual strength or spiritual genes, we'll say, that his children inherit from him. That will not be. The soul will totally be the soul of the deceased brother. We always say that Mashiach came from that relationship. But why was it necessary for Mashiach to come from that relationship? So there's Kabbalistic answers, which we'll talk about a little later. But the words of the Chazal, the Chofetz Chaim says a very interesting thought. The Chofetz Chaim, the Chazal tell us that Vayeto Leo, he turned to her, and his turning to her was against his will. This was the beginning of the kingdom of the house of David. Now, in fact, the Medrash, if I recall, the words were, when Vayeto Leo, he turned away, so like a malach told him, it's like forced him to go back to Tamar. And the Medrash says, Mehechon Malochim Yetzim, if you don't go back to Tamar, like, not that he said that or he felt it, but it was like almost in the air. He didn't know. He went because he wanted to be with Tamar. But there was like the angel saying, if he turns away, where will Mashiach come from? So it was like he was forced or compelled to go back to Tamar. So it says he turned to her, the Medrash says, against his will. And the purpose of the story, it continues, is to tell us that in the greatest of matters, the Satan intervenes. And there is no other solution but to go in a roundabout way, because on the straight path, the Satan intervenes and goals cannot be attained. All right, now you hear what he's really saying. That the idea is, when Yehuda wanted to pay his debt, it says there, Yehuda wanted to redeem it, so they said there was no harlot here. He says, we're Ayei HaKadosh. He said there was no harlot. So the Ruach HaKadosh, like announced, Chas V'Sholem, that there should be a harlot had been here. But these are the sparks of the redemption which pierced the dark. So what he's trying to say is, and this goes back to the Kabbalistic idea, that a lot of times, the Or HaChaim, we've spoken about it, I think, also, that there are sometimes souls, pure souls, elevated souls, that are imprisoned in what we call hard shells of darkness. And these souls have to be liberated. Now, among these great souls, this is already Kabbalah, among the great souls, Avram and Sarah, Ruth, Hamoaviah, Shmaya, and Avtalion, and others like them, were hidden. And these souls had to be brought out and taken in to Yiddishkeit. In fact, when we have the Parsha of Kiseitze la Milchoma Aleivecha in the Dvorim, when it says you go out to war against your enemy, you will see Bashivya among the captured, Eshes Yefas Toar, a very handsome woman, Vichashakta Bo, and you will desire her, Vilakachta Lecha Leisha, you will take her for a wife, and she becomes Jewish. So Kabbalists interpret that, Vereisa Bashivya, you will see hidden in that person, a Yefas Toar means a holy soul. So although it came about in a way, we'll say, which wasn't the holiest of ways, but sometimes in order to be able to take this soul, to capture this holy soul, it has to come about through an innate way. Now this is one approach of the Kabbalah. Another approach is that it has to go in such a way that the Satan should not stop it. Now how do you fool the Satan? For example, this is also in a sense Kabbalistic. We say on Yom Kippur, you know, you bring the two seirim, the two goats. One goat goes la'azazel and one goat as a korban. So what is the idea of throwing the goat la'azazel? So there's a lot of discussion. The Ramban brings down the idea that's like mentioned, that if there's a dog barking and he's going to disturb your audience, say, or you won't be able to walk by. So what do? You throw him a pound of meat. And then he's involved with this pound of meat, and in the meantime you could get by. So, and this is a Kabbalistic concept. So the Keach of Ra is there to seek, that was why he was created. So basically to do all that's there to defend his creation. So sometimes you have to go and trick, to go around without him being aware and to fool him. He doesn't realize that what is happening. He thought that this Yehuda and Tomer event is just another way of Yehuda fulfilling his desire. That why he was quieted down. The Yetzer is not going to go against that. He agrees with that. But the idea was that through this, Mashiach came about. So this was Kaviyochel, a way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that Mashiach should come about. This is the way it goes in the Kabbalistic, many people write in the Kabbalistic sense, which is difficult for us to understand. In fact, the Kabbalists write further. We know that there is a Kabbalistic concept that says that it's a Gemara, that a number of the great Tanoim went into what they call the Pardes. The Pardes means the hidden orchard. And they lost their rationale, or they lost their belief, or whatever it is. They couldn't get out. Now, they say, what was this garden of that the Kabbalah is speaking about? So they say it was this concept. This concept that the soul that is hidden amongst outer hard covers, there can be the inner soul of purity, is something with all their knowledge and understanding. We just say it as a fact. I mean, but in their rationalization and comprehension, this was something that they truly could not comprehend. It was this Kabbalistic concept that misled them. But this was an example here of the concept. What is interesting is that Dubna Magid says, he, of course, not like the Kabbalists, so he comes in a very down-to-earth approach. So he says, you know, they say, like we said, that the purpose of the Torah was not to hide the light from the Sotan, Faket, he says, but was a punishment for a measure of measure to Yehuda. Why was this a punishment? It says it's a rich man who married off his son, and he sent a friend word of, he sent him an invitation or in a letter which was all torn and dirty. So the friend paid him back. He sent him a present, but he wrapped it in dirty paper. He wrapped the present. So that was paying back Mida Keneged Mida, in a sense. So he says here also, it was true that Yosef Yehuda did a tremendous thing. He saved Yosef by suggesting that he be sold as a slave. And he told the father a bad animal ate him up. So as a measure for measure, although the kingdom would still come from his sons, right? But it won't come in such a way, it'll come in a devious way rather than a straight path, as we see from the story of Tamar. So that's an interesting thought. What he's saying is, this is not, we'll say, it would be a lot nicer if we would have a parsha in the Torah. We'll say for Yehuda, we wouldn't have to sit and discuss it and say, but Yehuda went ahead and he did commit an act with a harlot and so on. Deep down, of course, it was the will of God. But it would have been a lot nicer if Yehuda could have been the father of Malchus Beis David in a more grandiose way with beautiful wedding. But the fact, since Yehuda acted in Yosef's case by telling the father, Chayero, not saving him outright, but by covering it up in not such a fine way, so his mission of being the father of Malchus, of Melech HaMashiach, also had to be wrapped in plain brown paper. That's why we have the parsha. That's like the Dubna Magid tries to explain.